Which I realize is perhaps not quite as innocent. Okay, I pretended to just be a functionary, but actually I'm a secret agent. So, guys, sorry, I'm actually.
Do you have a tissue by any chance? I've never watched it without crying.
So, did you want some water? I got some water for you guys.
That would be great. Thanks.
It's the first time beyond us and one other person that's seen it. So, the composer that's working with us, and so it's weird because we watch
you
it through your
through
eyes.
Thank you for going through that with us.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Composed.
Well, I suppose I was going to ask you the question which you've kind of answered already, which was what was it like to see it beyond. You said to me before, Hilary, I know Rob a little bit. Hilary and I just chatting earlier on in the cafe, so. But we were just saying, you said to me something, you said you'd really only ever seen it on, you kind of made this gesture of kind of the little screen that we all kind of live with, these little screens, don't we?
Yes.
And that you were wondering, you were asking yourself the question of what it would be like to see it yourself, as spectators as it were, obviously, but also spectators in the sense of sitting in a room with people and that kind of film, cinema experience. So, I mean, clearly it was very moving for you. Did you want to kind of elaborate on that, or would you rather just kind of take in your feelings for a little bit, or
do you have anything you'd like to say about that?
Well, I mean, for me, it's very cathartic to see something that I felt my whole life kind of compressed in a short experience. And then to experience it with you. And I know for Hilary, who is constantly fixing things, and for the better, there are at least two or three edits that we just added. Some footage that we just shot of Lorenzo. She was probably approaching certain puzzles. There are aspects of the film that... that to us seemed like a puzzle, and so she was probably approaching those and figuring those out. I do think that the reason now it felt like we were ready to see it through other people's eyes, which is an interesting thing. I think it's dangerous to do that too early.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know watching this with a group of people, we felt like we were ready for that point because we knew that there are some areas that we didn't quite have right yet, and we didn't know which ones they were or how to go at them. So being able to kind of watch all of you watch the film helps give us a little bit of a gauge on that. There's something very different about watching it yourself after you've been working with it for so long, and then being forced into new eyes when sitting with a group of people watching it for the first time. It's a very different kind of experience.
Yeah. We were very worried about, you know, how are we going to go to the bathroom? You know, because we watch it at home, until you watch 5 minutes, you go to the bathroom, you watch another 10 minutes, you get some coffee, you know?
Yeah. This is uninterrupted watching.
Apparently we were able to do the whole thing without the restroom, too, so that was good.
Yeah, no dog barking, none of that, so... Yeah.
I mean, we can obviously, it'd be great to just open up. I'm sure people have got lots of questions. I mean, I'd quite like to ask just a sort of slightly dull question, maybe, just to bring the emotions down a little bit. But obviously, I'm interested in the process. I mean, Robert, I should say that obviously both Robert and Hilary are, you know, filmmakers, established filmmakers. I think one of the things that very interested me when I chatted to Robert the first time back in this time last year, and then when we met in Pittsburgh, was we were talking about the SA Film Festival and so forth. And I remember Robert saying to me that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but more or less what Robert was saying was the films that I've made so far are relatively conventional documentaries for public PBS typically. So Robert has made a film about the popularity of baseball in Cuba, for example. He's also made a film about the kind of, I think it's is the term wigging? Is it sort of like the idea of kind of the popularity of hip hop and hip hop culture amongst white youth in kind of fairly affluent suburbs in the US? You made a film together about stand-up comics going on tour, but I think you said, you know, these were kind of these were documentaries, and we were talking about the essayistic, and there were two things you said to me which I think are very interesting. One, you said to me, it's just a sense of being flooded by the quantity of material that you had to cope with, the amount of material you had to process, the different types of material, that even just as work, it was a different type of work. It wasn't just a question of, well, I know what the format is, so I'm going to take the content and put it into that format, which is a kind of crude but fairly accurate way of describing a lot of documentary filmmaking. You put content into a format. Whereas you felt here it was challenging on a material level simply by the quantity of material, but, second point, because of the personal angle. I mean, the fact not just that you appear in it, that your voice is in it, but that you don't pretend that there is an easy distance, or indeed any distance that you can take between the material. It's very difficult to you. It comes across in the film, you know, that you don't pretend to say, aha, well, I'm the nephew, and therefore I'm going to be able to sort this one out for you guys. You know, it's very clear that you want to say, yeah, there is a distance, there is an element of mystery, there's an element of not knowing, and that's what it's like. So I know on both those counts, I mean, for me, those are both very essayistic types of ways of thinking about what it might be to make a film, you know, to accept the complexity and the mess of the materials, and to accept the fact that you aren't necessarily going to turn that into something clean and neat and that means something in a straightforward fashion, but also accepting one's own experience, one's own subjectivity, one's own limitations in the process. So I don't know whether you want to comment on either of those two things.
Oh, there was,
or Hillary, for that matter.
Yeah, I think we can both. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff to comment on there. Maybe I'll start in the open to you.
In terms of material, our house is basically an archive at the moment. We've been living amongst these boxes of things everywhere. I mean, there were photographs, scrapbooks. I mean, all of this is kind of covered in the film, but, like, I don't know that we could even get across just how much stuff and then how many labor hours are involved in going through that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, whether that's this huge cache of Monty's photography that we came upon, you know, there's a small sampling of that in the film, but all of those kind of human hours of cleaning, scanning, getting into archival sleeves, like all of this kind of work to just see what's even there. You know, there were these film reels and home movies that we couldn't access at first because they were too brittle. So it's pulling in what are they called? Are they an archive house? I don't know. A restoration house. And so pulling them in so we can actually see what we have. I mean, so it's a lot of just functioning with material objects in all of this.
Yeah. No, I'm the youngest of eight siblings. And so part of the film involved us actually driving across country and where I have siblings just located in different states, half siblings, so my father's kids, and picking up materials, most of which nobody had looked at or seen, that he had collected over the years, and some of them smelled like vinegar.
Yes,
we had different media formats from the 1920s all the way up to the 1980s. Some of them we had professionally transferred, but then we also have learned to work with a lot of these formats and learned not to be scared of the archives, which is something that happens. You know, you don't want to possibly ruin this one precious piece of footage of Monty's that he shot, you know? But you learn not to get scared of the archives, which is very important. And I find that a lot of librarians that control archives are also scared of archives. To the essayistic, remember exactly what the question was there and what my response was. I had a response to that. But I will say that most people that I meet do the math very quickly. There are two responses I get when I say I'm Monty's nephew. One is, they look at me to see whether or not I look like him, which is... Yeah, and I've had better points, obviously, with that, and worse points in my life. It makes sense. And the second thing they'll do is they'll figure out the math of the relationship and whether or not I have the right to talk about them. Right? So this tension between the proximity and the distance is something I'm very familiar with, because I've always been very aware that I never knew Monty personally. Right? And so when we talked about this film, this is one of the things that we had to work out, which was how to make something that was really always refracted in some way and told through different readings of the book, different family interests, some of whom I didn't trust and some of whom I did trust, a pile of archival materials. Basically, I would say I grew up with just the point never to trust the books. But beyond that, there's a lot of pain there. Right? And so going into this, I think, allowed people that were still alive to talk. But also I think that if this film is uniquely ours, it's also the awareness of the distance, that it's not trying to say, oh, I'm authoritative because I have a genetic relationship, right? I have some access, but then I don't have a lot of access, right? And I think it's very different than other documentary biographies in that regard, where typically, like the written biography, you're playing up your authority as an author right away. That was not something that we were interested in. I don't know how you pulled it off as the editor. Which is where documentaries are made.
I mean, I think that, you know, there can be a tendency to look to a documentary to find some answers or find the real. And I think we're both kind of against that impulse, just kind of generally. The real when it comes to Monty is something we're gonna never know, and it's probably far too multifaceted to actually try to commit to. And I think that's a good thing, the not knowing and the knowing that you don't and that it's okay. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you have that as kind of your guiding viewpoint, as you try to put something like this together, if you are being kind of didactic, or if you're overstating that you know someone's thinking, you can see it and kind of nip it in the bud. You're like, no, I actually don't know that. Let's take that out. As to how to put the whole thing together, I mean, that's 4 years of just talking to people and doing things over and over and over again. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think it would be great to have some questions from the audience. So, yeah, please go ahead.
Being as fanatic about films as a psychoanalyst, which makes me neither brilliant and even, but I can see your problem. I would say, from my point of view, things have to be unresolved, even if I knew people for, say, 10, 15 years as my patients, I never, ever get to the ground. It is impossible. It is even more impossible to get to the ground of my own personality. So, I mean, to deal with, you said, unresolved, it is good if there are unresolved issues, because this is life. Life is unfortunately neither deductive, nor it is solvable, nor can you do anything about it. I think in the case of Montgomery Clift, we can say he lived his life and he died of cardiac arrest. And yes, these are the only facts we know about his death. And everything is our personal interpretation of it. Yes, he was gay, and even today, being gay outside a certain very, very narrow, I mean, like here basically, is still a disadvantage in life. You go to the countryside, you go to smaller cities, wherever you are, And yes, it does bother you. You get beaten up, I mean, in London sometimes. But I mean, to make this the singular issue would be totally wrong, because his work came first, his relationship to other people, both genders, came second or equal first, and his family came equal third. But these are the three things which we know. But to reinterpret what he thought at a certain time, and it's vain, it's totally vain. So I would rather like you make a second film with many unresolved, or a third.
Godfather 3, people are not sure about Godfather 3, are they?
Yeah. Well, I hope a lot here was unresolved. I mean, I hope that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think Lance got his hand up first, and then Lynn, and then Lindsay. Yeah?
Robert Hillary, I'm so pleased that I came in this afternoon to watch the film.
Great, thank you.
Very, very interesting, lots of levels. But this is the first time you've seen it in front of a live audience. And although you're right, there's a lot of pain here, and there's a serious argument being made in this essay. One of the things that I liked about the film was that you brought out not only the humour in your subject.
Oh, good.
But you also did it humorously. So my question to you is, in front of an audience for the first time, were there any laugh points that you didn't expect at the start? Because you clearly made, visually, you gave us a gag, a laugh line. But did we laugh at stuff that you hadn't anticipated?
You know, I think that the enthusiasm of the laugh in a couple of places was a little surprising, because, you know, you never really know until you get it in front of people if these things are going to actually connect or not. All of you reacting to the unmade biopics, for instance, didn't know how much of that was going to come across to everyone, so I was glad to see that that seemed to connect.
Yeah, you don't know if the point's going to, in that particular section where there was a laughter at Michael Easton, the screenwriter of the unmade biopic, talking about drinking too much.
Wandering
the streets.
Yeah.
There was a debate over whether or not that was as good as another bite where he drives the turn that Monty had his accident on, which would be better. And for some reason, this one seemed better, but we weren't sure if that would communicate, like, how clear our interpretation of that, obviously, right? So that would be one thing, yes. And then, yeah.
No, sorry. It's just I was thinking there's the humor, but there's also, I think, the other thing that's really important is that there is a joy as well, that you see, you know, just watching, I remember the link that you showed me when you did from your presentation
right.
in Pittsburgh. And it was just that sense of Montgomery Clift's joy, you know, joy in life and pleasure in life and kind of, you know, that does very strongly counteract just a few shots of that does counteract
right.
this kind of sense of this weight of, as you say, the myth of the suffering and the
right.
the guilt and all this kind of stuff. And I think that's slightly different from the humor, but I think there was a, I don't know what other people felt, but I felt that sense of a joyful human being who you know, had fun and liked people and, you know, was that came across beautifully, I thought.
That's great.
And
yes.
that's a different thing from humor, whether we laugh or not, particular bits, but you can have a feeling inside you of sharing joy, which I think, and it's like as, is it Lorenzo's?
Lorenzo.
The end was saying about the fire, in a way, maybe, just occurred to me. But that sense of warmth, of a real, wow, you know, what a beautiful human being.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, speaking beyond some of those humorous parts, like, I heard some rumblings and saw some noddings in some places that helped me know that some of the things that we were trying to get across were coming across. So that is definitely one of those benefits of getting to watch it with everyone. You know, I heard some rumblings, like when Lorenzo is kind of toward the end there and we're talking about, like, Lorenzo possibly being accused of murdering Monty. You know, I could see a few kind of I couldn't see your faces, but what I imagined was kind of like a, oh, that's a horrible thing to have happened, and indeed that was. I mean, talking to Lorenzo was, he's hard to edit because it's hard to get through to hear this kind of emotion and not feel it yourself. I mean, I don't know, the editing gets interrupted by emotion quite a bit. So, I mean, Lorenzo is one of those people in here that I think is very moving.
Yeah. Well, and you know, in terms of the humor point, too, is mm-hmm. is everybody told me Monty was a funny person. Yeah. Jack, Lorenzo, my father, or some people that were not in the film, in fact, that that's neither here nor there. But they all told me he was funny, but I didn't, it's just, what does that mean? It wasn't until we, one, realized that well, my father had all these recordings with him, but then also Monty made all these recordings, not of himself talking to himself, but of phone calls, everyday type things. So, like, Hillary including the portion of him talking to his mother about the dentist, you know, is a great example where I think that's the kind of thing an essay film, I think, can allow. Without people feeling like this is not part of that train. The train stopped for some reason. It's not supposed to stop, right? And it allows that moment. And I think that if there are ever times where I felt closer to him as a person in a non-reciprocal way, obviously, it was in listening to these kind of everyday conversations about going to the dentist or how's so-and-so doing and this and that. And it was those moments, right? Not the things that were really part of all the public discourse around Monty.
Lynn, do you want to go next?
Thank you both so much. That was fantastic. So many things to think about. But I wanted to ask you about Lorenzo, and if you could give us some of your thinking about the treatment of Lorenzo. We see him once?
Don't see him at all.
Don't see him at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can think why you did that, but can you tell us why you did that?
Sure. Well,
I'm curious why you think.
Yeah.
I'm more curious about
maybe afterwards you could tell us, yes, because we might have communicated that, so I'm curious about how that came across.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Lorenzo did not want to appear on camera, so he was willing to give us an audio interview. So in order to give him a presence nonetheless, we tried to suggest it through his audio recording appearing. So those lights are kind of a stand-in for him. You know, why he doesn't want to be on camera is something that I don't know that I can necessarily speak for him.
No photographs of him either.
No.
He doesn't like his picture taken. No. That we could have put some photographs in. There's so many ways to answer this, right?
Yeah.
The story, what Lorenzo would say is that he had a very traumatic incident when he was a teenager, a child maybe, at 12, 13, where he grew up in Florida and got badly injured by a dog who had scarred his face. And they wouldn't let him go to the White Hospital, which was across the street from his house. That's his explanation.
Scarring.
And he is scarring, and he doesn't want his picture taken. Now, friends of his, Cicely Tyson, who's a close friend of his, which I didn't even know somehow, but she told me that she just sneaks in photographs of him. So there are, I mean, you know. But the other answer to that, which is to me more interesting in terms of this film, is that for me, Lorenzo, because he has been my constant family figure in my life, I mean, he made a choice to be in my life, that he always refused our efforts to label him. You know, so were you Monty's boyfriend? Were you Monty's husband? Were you Monty's lover? Were you, the books say you were a nurse or a servant, right? What exactly was that relationship? He still, to this day, will not answer that, right? He's fighting against the epistemology of the closet, right? when he does that. He says, I was this, I was that. We went to movies together. We came to London to see Laurence Olivier. We did this, we did that. You know, that's his answer. And it's when I feel like the circumstances had to be right to make this film, understanding that's one of the circumstances. It took many decades for me to get that. And I think not wanting his picture taken is such a wonderful gesture in the same name, where we have to figure out how to make him present in the film without giving you the image of him. Yeah. It was a wonderful, wonderful limitation. Yeah. So that's not his answer. That's my answer.
Yeah. And I also feel like with Lorenzo, I mean, yes, we could have put photos of him in, but I think to respect him and not do it. You know, he didn't want his image in it, and in the same way that he resists this kind of labeling and needing to kind of draw a box around. I mean, I think letting Lorenzo kind of exist in the imagination through his voice is kind of in line with that same kind of idea.
Mm-hmm. There was just a footnote to that. There was an image where it's confusing because I thought it was a blurry image of a black man dining with a white man. And that's kind of... Is that just a stand-in as well? Because that was like, oh, yeah.
That's
what the
hell is that?
Footage.
You know?
Oh, yeah,
that's
yeah, yeah,
archival
yeah.
Footage.
I couldn't compute that, yeah.
Right.
But is that
that's
him?
Actually one
that
of the things we would like to know. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's the footage.
I got you.
Yeah, so is that...
And you see, you only see the back of the person's head.
And it's a bit fuzzy as well.
Yeah.
So I thought that was also because he didn't want to appear, but he was happy to just have that kind of fuzzy. But is that him, or
it's
is that just
him.
A staged?
It's not him.
It's a staged image. Okay.
It's not him.
It's not him.
Well, it's not staged. It's older footage from is it Monty's footage that he shoot?
It's
that?
I think it's probably.
Or someone else.
Is it Bill Gunn? I can't remember who
Bill Gunn
it was.
Bill Gunn shot it.
But
it's Bill Gunn in the footage.
I think it's Bill Gunn in the footage. Yeah. So it's archival footage of Monty and another actor. I think
Cole.
Out and about doing something.
William Gunn.
Yeah.
We think. It's especially with Monty's photos, there's a lot of people we can't ID. I mean, it's...
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But
that was deliberate. That was also a stand-in, right? Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Deliberate, but it kind of, it's there, there is someone there, I wondered if that person would be read as Lorenzo, and I'm not sure if it bothers me or not.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that we'll have to discuss, because because it's the back of his head, and it's that, you know, so it might even accentuate more that we're not showing him. So I don't know where I fall on that decision.
And
it's a decision.
Where's the other? I didn't miss the other shot where someone on the street. You said someone walking behind.
Oh, that's footage from I think The Defector. I think there's
the film.
Yeah, so there's some footage from a film that Monty was in. I think Wild River actually. There are one or two black men walking behind him, and that I think is when Patty Bosworth is discussing this idea of a black male servant. So that is also a sort of deliberate choice in that, like, seeing Lorenzo in that position is kind of I'm not a fan of that, obviously. It's very reductive, and so using footage from a film to kind of illustrate that idea is part of why that's
Which
there.
Which film was that?
Wild River.
Okay.
Just in terms of time...
Another assumption of why he didn't want to appear was maybe because of the accusations, and I don't know if he faced any investigation about that, because as a black man in America,
yes,
even a slightest doubt, he would probably have more of an investigation than a regular person.
Absolutely another answer that I would believe in. There's a reluctance by him and pretty much everyone I know, or have known that knew Monty, but Lorenzo in particular, of being fearful of talking about anything that has to do with Monty, because he feels like he's always misrepresented. And so that's also a possibility. He felt like there's, you know, the degree of trust with us, you know? Maybe it's better to sit down and do an audio-only interview instead of going that far. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but certainly he's aware of that, yes. Yes. But he tells me, baby Bobby, I'm about to die. It doesn't matter at this point. You do what you want, you know?
Okay.
But it's very painful for him. It's very painful for him to talk about Monty.
But if it's not on record, is he happy to talk to you? Is it just the trust?
I talk to him
just
all the time.
With you? No, but about this. So basically, is it more a trust of with you, and that's why the audio, that's the limit of his trust, or was it also the trust of
the trust
how
of
the world
the public,
going to perceive
the
it?
The world.
Yeah, exactly.
The world.
That's what I mean.
Yes, not with me. No,
yeah.
The world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we need to...
Yeah, thank you.
There's Lindsay and then there's Mandy, okay? So if we just try and keep things, we have to keep things fairly tight now, I think,
just
in terms of time.
It's a privilege, first of all, and thank you very much for actually taking time to work here. I just wanted to put a hypothetical question. Obviously, big fan of Montgomery Clift. You know, he has a lot of potential and lovely method acting and, like, you know, it's a nominated four times an Oscar. Where would you have liked to have seen his career, you know, had he had a longer career, you know, like in Hollywood? What do you think would have diversified and gone career-wise? Because you mentioned that sport.
Well, that's unanswerable, in part because he was such an independent spirit.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't know.
I mean, I think there's, you know, some suggestion in his own
directing.
Words that
right.
directing was something that he was very interested in doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like I could see it. I don't know what he would have done, but I think it would have been really interesting to
yeah.
see something he directed. He had a very keen mind toward performance, so
mm-hmm.
I think it would have been a nice thing to see.
It would have been nice to have known with his talent to kind of improvise and obviously, you know, get into the editing of scripts as well, maybe to see if he would have actually, you know, got into more kind of like mainstream kind of like productions.
Right.
Did you feel it was kind of like just a tiny question, did you think it was a little bit of an injustice that he wasn't a bit more professionally recognised for his writing efforts?
I think that I've learned that all actors are, maybe not all, but a lot.
Yeah.
And I would say that it seems to me like he is someone, and I'm not speaking from as like a film historian who can tell you exactly who took control of their parts and rewrote scripts and how much, right? But the degree to which the illusion of Hollywood depends on the feeling that you're watching actually Montgomery Clift is so strong. I do think that it's important for us to restore some of the sense of labor mm-hmm. that he was putting in these films. And the method is actually an example of something that is billed as you're seeing the real Montgomery Clift because he was a method actor. Like, he wasn't reading, staying up all night going over parts with his act with Mira Rostova or whoever else that he was working with and changing lines, right? He approached it very, very meticulously and thought very deeply about it. And as someone that has dealt with my fair share of textual analysis in academia, I can really appreciate that keen mind of his. So I would say, yeah, I would like for that aspect of really all actors, a lot of actors at least, that are working very, the ideas that they just get up and they act like themselves, and it's the director that did it all. You know, Hitchcock slams Monty. Houston saw him as the perfect scapegoat. That bothers me.
But doesn't it kind of, sorry, I'm a little bit greedy here, but doesn't it kind of take the pressure off their, well, I might swear, their own kind of like cock ups as directors to kind of like manifest the frustrations, like I say, on Montgomery Clift and his peers, you know, to kind of like deflect from their own kind of professional. Personal professional.
Maybe I think with Houston I mean the star is an economic entity and I think they saw someone that cost a lot of money that they could easily scapegoat because of the things that were not approved in terms of his behavior or alleged behavior, some of which they planted. So it was just a way to recoup the money.
Okay, so Mandy.
No, I'm okay. Thanks.
Are you sure you don't want
to? Yeah, answered the question.
Oh, okay.
It's to Mira Rostova. I was interested in that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, we've slightly overrun our time, and I'm conscious of the fact that we have another screening at 4:30, for which we have to do some deep thinking. I say that to Pierre and Vincent, just to convince them that I'm serious about this. But listen, there's so much more that we could say, and I just wanted to thank you once again on behalf of the festival, on behalf of the people in this room, just for being so generous, really, and sharing it with us. You know, it's very, very special. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Why is your dog crying? I get emotional. He's great. Yeah, it's just okay. Yeah, we accept emotions in my family.
Okay, good.
Okay. I was really pleased that people clapped at Jenny. Show it to people. You don't know how it's going to be seen.
So I wanted to introduce you to it. So this is Felicity Sparrow.
Okay.
And I, do you remember, you may have seen, I forwarded an email to you from Ron Peck.
Yes. Yeah. Very, very dear friend of mine.
Oh, yes.
And many years ago,
yes,
he was trying to make a film about Montgomery Peck. He couldn't get the funding for it.
Right.
I believe one of the people he approached said,
Yes. That there's a lot of that. Yes.
Is it?
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Anyway,